Look at this. It is September 7, 2023, and it is time for the AEW Dynamite review, because it's a Thursday here on the Mr. Warren Hayes Show podcast, where we talk about pro wrestling. But specifically here, we talk about last night's Dynamite right here on YouTube.com/Mr. Warren Hayes, or on your favorite podcast application, wherever you decide to pop in and listen. Thank you very much for being here. Thank you very much for your listens, for your likes on YouTube, for your subscriptions on YouTube, for your follows on the podcast stuff, for your 5-star reviews on Apple Podcasts, for your 5-star ratings on Spotify. Look, thank you if you've already done it. Thank you if you're going to do it. Hey, even thank you if you're thinking about doing it. Those things, they do help grow the podcast, and I appreciate you tremendously for hanging out, for being here, for coming in for some thoughts on the first AEW Dynamite without CM Punk. We cleared the first collision this past Sunday, and now we're into Dynamite, the first Punkless Dynamite without the influence of Phil Brooks. If you're just popping in here and you're like, Warren, what are your thoughts on the CM Punk departures and his contribution? Look, I talked about it on the Collision Review this Sunday a little bit. Went much more in depth on the podcast this week. It's available right now if you want to get into that. On the Mr. Warren Hayes Show proper is what I'm talking about. So, you know, I've been through it all. I think I've covered everything that needs to be covered and talked about and opined at this point. We're ready to move on. So you know, if you're into that, if you haven't gotten around to hearing what I think about the whole situation, well, it's all right there for you. But we're not rehashing this today, is what I'm saying. We're going to get right into this week's Dynamite, which happened on September 6, 2023, from the Indiana Farmers Coliseum in Indianapolis, Indiana. 3,006 tickets distributed. Of course, this is always according to WrestleTix, for a setup of 3,254. Like, we're not doing we're still not doing bonkers business. This is actually a little under the average for Dynamite. And, you know, the next week's Dynamite is looking kind of dire as well, if I'm not mistaken. Let me pull up a number here. And I mean, you know, in all fairness, just to be very, very clear here, this has, these numbers were bad even when Phil was still around. So, I'm not going to sit here and try to make a correlation here between, oh, yeah, see, Phil Brooks is gone, CM Punk is gone, now the tickets, these tickets were suffering. We're talking about the show in Cincinnati next week at the Heritage Bank Center. Basically the go home show to Grand Slam, 1,746 tickets. That's really not a good number. That's a dire number and hasn't been improving really. And, you know, we're still, you know, again, according to WrestleTix, we're still at 5,818 tickets distributed for Arthur Ashe. Like, these are not great indicators, right? These are not great houses that we're doing. We're a far cry from even last year's Arthur Ashe, where tickets were basically double this. The number of people who were there were double. Of course, the first Arthur Ashe show, which, you know, was in the spectrum of the CM Punk return and Bryan Danielson having his first AEW match as well. Those things were special. That's lightning in a bottle. That's, you know, something that you will have a hard time reproducing as your shows move on. So that was a very special moment in time. We were close to 20,000 people in Arthur Ashe. Last year, half of that. Now we're getting half of last year. So far, hopefully, there'll be some announcements that will be made that will help these ticket sales. But again, look, like we've talked about, right? If you start getting guaranteed deals, you start getting guaranteed money, venues, you're not scraping as much to try and get as much as you can out of the venues, right? It doesn't matter quite as much if your ticket sales on a certain night are a little low. So, you know, we're not doom and glooming here. We're just pointing out things that we pointed out previously as well when it came to Collision in the Canadian tour. But, you know, you would expect Dynamite, the flagship show, to be pulling more than 1,700 tickets for a show. That's a little crazy to me. Like, that's going to be that's going to be an empty building. And Arthur Ashe still, like, again, according to WrestleTix, as I'm recording this on the Thursday noon, 5,818. Like, these are not great numbers, folks. They're just not. And again, it's not a doom and gloom situation, but it's like, okay, well, what's happened to this product? I think there's a bunch of analysis we could do. I think one of the things that AEW should refocus on doing is doing what it does best. Kind of like what it did at the pay-per-view this weekend at All Out 2023 this past weekend, which is put on tremendous pro wrestling shows and not try to copy the market leader, not try to be something else, something that it's not. Try to move away from what brought them to the dance in the first place. That's my overall thought, but not exactly the spot or the time or the place to get into it, because y'all want me to talk about last night's Dynamite. So let's go for it. Starts off with Orange Cassidy coming out for a promo. He gets cheers. He gets chants from the audience. Everyone is happy to see him. He's heavily taped up, wrist, forehead. He thanks everyone. He says, he thanks everyone for their support, but he's going to be here every week, regardless of what happened. Now, that's an interesting thing to do. I can understand it, but if I were booking this, I would have had him take a couple of weeks off to sell the beating, because our boy got the shit beat out of him on Sunday. I would have sold the beating. Let him go away for a couple of weeks, and then when he shows up, oh my God, the reaction, right? Now it just kind of feels like business as usual. I think we may have missed a little opportunity here to make Orange Cassidy just a smidge hotter. Not saying that they failed. Not saying that they've completely whiffed the opportunity to, no. But what I'm saying is that I think this was a layup to just have him go away for a couple of weeks, come back, look stronger, and distance makes the heart grow fonder, right? Absence makes the hearts grow fonder. If you're of an alien species listening to this right now, you have multiple hearts. But humans, as it stands right now, they only have one. So we'll stick to that adage. Anyway, as he starts to head back up the ramp, Mox's music plays. So Mox comes to ringside for his first title defense, and he gets into the ring, and Cassidy they trade glares at each other as Orange Cassidy is going up the ramp. He's already halfway there. All nice little moment. You know what I liked about the production of that is that you had a tri-screen, right? You had sort of a replay of big moments from the pay-per-view, and then you had two other boxes where you had Cassidy and Mox. And since they were in completely different areas, right? Mox was in the ring, or coming to the ring from the audience as he usually does, and Orange Cassidy up on the ramp. Then you had both of these guys' reactions to each other. You had the cameras on both guys, which I thought was great. I thought that was a nice touch. And that leads us into Jon Moxley successfully defending his AEW International title for the very first time against AR Fox. During the match, Darby Allin and Nick Wayne look on backstage on a TV. They're keeping their peepers peeled on this one. Of course, AR Fox and Darby Allin have made up. The status with Nick Wayne is still ambiguous. I don't want to say up in the air. I don't want to say, I think it's ambiguous. How about that? Fox gets some stuff in, like a dive and a slingshot DDT, but Mox stays pretty much in control for the entire deal here. Wraps it up with some a hammer and anvil elbows, King Kong Lariat, and the Death Rider just going through the motions at that point. Good little match, good little fun little opener, was hot. After the match, Darby Allin walks out to help Fox back up onto his feet, and then in the meantime, backstage, Christian Cage shows up. He's flanked with Luchasaurus, of course, to chatted up with Nick Wayne. And he said, you know, he tells Nick Wayne, says, look, I owe you an apology. I looked at footage of your father, Buddy Wayne, you know, and I apologize. He's worse than I thought he was. And basically tells him, if you want a mentor, you need to turn to a true champion. Now, when they did the AR Fox turn thing, going back to becoming a, well, you know, when Swerve turned on Fox, I should say, and which I was not a fan of, and I'm still not a fan of, you know, we were all desperately hoping that, you know, you got to make this make sense, right? And the fact that, you know, Darby Allin just immediately forgave him while Nick Wayne is in the ring, everyone sort of thought that was weird. That was the biggest element here. Now, I like that it's ambiguous with Nick Wayne, and it should stay like that until there's a clear direction here. And I really think the clear direction should be Christian Cage finally getting through to Nick Wayne. We'll talk about it later, but finally getting through to Nick Wayne to bring him onto his side and officially turn. Because if you're Nick Wayne and your home was invaded by this guy and your best pal is suddenly forgiving him and your home was invaded and he had you bleed and he beat you within an inch of your life and your friend is like, nah, we're cool, dude. And you're like, wait, what about me? What about my feelings? Maybe I'm not cool. But we'll talk about that in a little bit. I think there's still stuff to happen here. A good little opener. Then we had an AEW TBS title match. Chris Statlander retained after defending her title successfully against Emi Sakura. This was a sub-5-minute match that felt longer, but not in the bad sense, in the sense that there was so much stuff happening in this match. The pace of this match was tremendous and great stuff. Strong, in and out, but compelling. Well done. And Emi, she just goes hard from the start. And she does not let up. And she's going strong, really strong. Tremendous strike exchange with Statlander. And I'm looking at Statlander. And, you know, Chris with her, you know, her surgically repaired knees and whatnot, you know, there's a lot of stuff that we don't necessarily expect Chris Statlander to do moving forward. She's not as mobile, not as nimble, which is fine. And I think a lot of the high flying stuff could take a back seat if she switches up her style a little bit and focuses on strength attacks, on just being bigger than, you know, what, like 65% of the roster, taller. She looks stronger than everyone there. If she focuses on that, upping her strike game and whatnot, she'll look fantastic. She looked fantastic in this match. I really like this one. I mean, Sakura does the double underhook backbreaker, but Statlander wins with the Wednesday Night Fever since she's on Dynamite. I really like this match. I thought it was great. Just full of stuff. Look, I'm going to leave it at that for now. Roderick Strong is backstage. He's got I guess it was a pre-tape with the Kingdom. He's talking about his life. And the difficulties that he went through with his parents, I, a lot of it was a shoot, and there's some really tragic stuff that he left out as well. Rod did not have an easy upbringing, let's put it that way. He talks about how he found refuge in pro wrestling, and it's not a business to him, it's everything, and he's going to win the Grand Slam tournament. Le Sex Gods, the return of Chris Jericho and Sammy Guevara as a tag team defeat Aussie Open. Don Callis comes out on commentary here. Because, clearly he's going to start schmoozing Sammy. Good little match here. Double stalling suplex by Guevara and Chris Jericho on Kyle Fletcher. And a double team PK senton by Aussie Open then. Codebreaker by Jericho and a tornillo by Guevara, but Jericho accidentally pescados onto Guevara, so a little friendly fire there. Aussie Open get in control and they land the Aussie arrow. Kicks and a brain buster by Fletcher on Jericho. More friendly fire by Jericho onto Sammy Guevara, but that it still nonetheless eventually leads to Jericho hitting the Judas effect for the win. Look, I've been on this podcast telling you long enough at this point that Jericho needs to start getting his heat back. He needs to start getting wins. So I'm okay with him winning here and getting the big win with his finisher. But could you not have picked any other team than Aussie Open to get the heat off of, right? Aussie Open are legitimately one of the greatest tag teams in the world right now. And they've been pushed as such everywhere. But, you know, they're basically getting like a subpar Jay White treatment, you know, where Jay White comes in and he's this international superstar, but he's slotted into the mid card. He's been having a winning record. He's protected, don't get me wrong. But these guys don't even have the privilege of being protected. They're just losing shit. They lost their titles. They lose another match. Now they lose this match. It's like, I don't get it, frankly. I think you could have used any other team than Aussie Open, quite honestly. You know, use Action Andretti and the other top flight guy, Dante, Darius Martin. Like, use those two guys. Because you know that tag team is not going to last. Just use these two guys. And then Andretti has his story with Jericho. You know, you got a little something-something there. Andretti doesn't have to take the loss. Anyway, you know what I mean? But after the match, because of all this this friendly fire, Le Sex Gods get into a shoving match. Security breaks it up, and then Sammy leaves through the crowd. And then Don Callis almost instantly says, "Well, guys, I gotta go." So there's your sign right there. There's something. Maybe our prayers will be answered. Maybe. And Sammy Guevara will return to being a heel where he belongs. I really don't. I don't get babyface Sammy. I really don't. We get a recap of Bryan Danielson and Ricky Starks, their match, their strap match that they had it all out, complemented with a fiery promo by Starks. No big surprise there. We know he's great, but it was so on point and wonderful, showing off his wounds, the lesions that he suffered during the match, making a point that the punishment he took was to make a point itself, right? He made a point that he wanted to make a point. And he's just tired of being looked over. We're going to see what happens on Collision this Saturday, but you have to believe that they're going to push the gas on this here, right? You have to believe. Don Callis is backstage with Takeshita, putting over the fact that Takeshita beat Kenny Omega twice, and there's new art on an easel. It's covered up. Don Callis says we're going to reveal it next week. Okie dokie then. I like how this artwork is becoming Callis' shtick, where he commissions this art. And then, he's like one of these art collectors. He has his own private gallery, but just made up of his own shit. Things in his own image. MJF gets into the ring, and it's time for his promo. We were told that he was going to address the crowd live, and here he is. He hits the ring, puts over the fact that he's wrestling at Grand Slam. You know, he says, Tony Khan told me I had to wrestle twice this month, but I didn't realize he told me or whatever, you know, that it was going to be at Grand Slam. He says, oh, back in my neck of the woods kind of thing. So he was happy about that. And make no bones about it. I talked about the poor sales for Grand Slam. This was by design. This was not accidental. This is absolutely, hey, MJF, you're the guy. People love you. Go out there and tell people that you're going to be wrestling. Let's move some tickets. That was by design. Anyway, continues a bit. Samoa Joe comes in. He says, hey, I see you out here full of piss and vinegar. I wanted a front seat. So what seems to be the problem, kid? MJF says the only reason Samoa Joe came out here so fast is that he confused his music for an ice cream truck. I was like, wait, is he making fat jokes? No, he's talking about Twisted Metal. I have not watched it. Has anyone watched it? Let me know in the comments if you've watched the Twisted Metal TV show, but I don't know. I feel like there's not enough car wrecks and, you know, explosions, vehicular explosions and stuff like that. That's the whole deal with it. I don't know. Let me know if you watch it and if you liked it. Joe says, the last time he had anything to do with an ice cream truck, he was busy being the biggest star on the other company's network. Was that fantastic skit that he had on the Edge and Christian show deal that they had. Truly one of the highlights of the WWE network, even to this day. What a fun time that was. That might sound ironic, but that I'm being sarcastic, but I'm not. I really thought that was good stuff. So he's like, again, what's the problem, kid? Max gets angry. And he says, you know, I've got some creative names for you. I'm very creative, Joe, and I have some names. And he starts rattling off, you know, names, and none of them really land. And he sounds just very juvenile. And Mecca Lecca High, your Schmeckle's tiny, Joe. I'm like, okay, that's a reach there. I don't think it was. Yeah. And Joe responds something about, you know, circumcision. Look, in my hands, this was a spot where a lot of people checked out and they were like, okay, this sucks. But I don't think this segment sucked. I think this might have been a little awkward. Made me feel a little uncomfortable. Didn't quite like it. I was like, oh, we're trying too hard here. But nonetheless, Joe asks him again, what is your problem, kid? MJF loses his cool, says, call me kid one more time and I'll knock your teeth down down your throat. And then he goes down telling another WWE trauma story again. Not necessarily another one. We've heard this one before. He recounts the story of when William Regal blew him off when he had been brought in for a tryout when he was 19 years old, right? And we all know how that story ended, with MJF knocking his British ass out and sending him back, packing back to NXT. And this is the line that popped me. And Joe, if you play your cards right, you're next. That to me is a much better line than the Samoa Doe or Schmeckel, small Schmeckel, whatever, tiny Schmeckel. That was a great line. I will say, I'm a little exhausted with I called it the WWE trauma promos. I'm a little excited. I'm a little exhausted about those. You know, it's like, Max, you're doing so fucking well here. You know, and now people love you and you're doing so good. It's fine. WWE completely whiffed on you. Completely, completely, completely and utterly. And it's probably best for you as well that they did whiff. You know, because you'd probably be, you know, right now you might be, on NXT, mixing tunes together with Carl Fredericks. Who knows what you might be up to with DJ Carl Fredericks. This is all to reference the video that everyone has seen multiple times at this point, the video or the GIF at the very least, of Samoa Joe coming to the ring in NXT, Max being there as a security guard, and then Samoa Joe shuffling, shoving him, and then getting a little smirk. Joe says he didn't think of him as a kid when he pushed him into that wall. He thought of him as a little bitch. We're covering all the bases here. Penis jokes, bitch. He's going to enter the tournament, win it, and come for him. And then until then, says, have a nice day. MJF leaves and Joe kicks the ropes into his no-nos and then beats him up. Max recovers and then nails Samoa Joe in his no-nos. So, you know, we've just got swollen groins galore, but that still doesn't keep Samoa Joe from landing a Uranagi high up on the injured neck of MJF. And MJF really sells that. Adam Cole comes in for the save to avoid a muscle buster, which probably could have been detrimental here. MJF's neck is hurt. You know, he's being escorted back by medical personnel. Joe calls him a bitch again. And then Roderick Strong comes out during all this chaos for his match. Adam! I don't know if they just forgot the, if they didn't play the music or if this is his new entrance now. But this is what it, look, I like the segment. And I don't have a problem, especially on a show like this, where a lot of things were happening. We had a lot of pro wrestling matches on this card as well. Good little TV matches. I don't have a problem when we have an extended promo period from a guy who is legitimately a great promo. Like, if we were sitting here, if it was Roderick Strong who was cutting a 10-minute promo segment, I don't think we'd be sitting here going, ugh, that was great. You know, it's like, I don't have an issue with it. There's quibbles within it. I pointed them out, a couple of quibbles, but it doesn't distract my enjoyment of it. And pro wrestling in North America, promos are part of the thing. That's the one thing that we have to get over here. And I think it told this story well. And I think it set up Samoa Joe versus MJF quite well as well. I would not be surprised that this is the main event for Grand Slam. Joe is such that he is the coolest motherfucker. He's just the coolest guy. And you believe everything he says when he's menacing, when he's mean. And he's a guy who can go toe-to-toe with MJF. He's comfortable on the mic. He's a fantastic promo in his own right. I enjoyed the segment. You know, if you didn't like it, I understand why you didn't like it. Don't get me wrong. I didn't have an issue with it. Then we had the first match of the AEW World Title Grand Slam Eliminator Tournament quarterfinal. Roderick Strong defeated Trent Beretta. Roddy, of course, removes the brace. Because of course, right? And then Roderick Strong tosses Trent around for the, you know, basically the start of the match here. He's getting all of his licks in. Trent, of course, fights back with a German and a top rope Rana, which leads into a super close near fall on Roderick Strong. But Roderick Strong puts an end to it with the end of heartache. Solid little match, nothing offensive, nothing, you know, nothing that'll blow your mind, but absolutely a good little television match here. Good performance. Of course, once he's done, Roderick Strong puts the brace back on. So he advances to the semifinals of the tournament, which are going to be held on Collision this week. Both semifinals for both sides of the bracket. They actually got out there and gave us some brackets as opposed to just dropping names as we go along. I'm like, oh, we're actually putting thought into this. So last night on Dynamite, we had the left side of the brackets decided, where we had Trent Beretta versus Roderick Strong, and then in the main event, Darby Allin versus Nick Wayne. On the right side of the bracket, this is going to be going down on Rampage this week. Penta is going to be taking on Jay Lethal, and Samoa Joe is going to be taking on Jeff Hardy. Now, both of the semifinals are going to take place on Collision on Saturday, with the finals of the Eliminator Tournament on Dynamite next week. You know, quick and easy, out of the way, maximizing the use that you have for your 5 hours of weekly programming. I mean, I have no issues with this. It's just an in and out thing. Get your people into the positions you want. And then, you know, a good reason to watch Collision. So a good reason for anyone who's into this to watch throughout. Am I one of those who's into it enough to watch throughout? You know, I usually skip Rampage. Not going to lie. I watch highlights. Watch it the next day or the day after. So that's what's going on. Good little match. Roderick Strong moves on. Renee Paquette is backstage with Toni Storm, who's doing some more pristine character work here. She wants to look forward to a four-women match next week for Saraya's number one contenders. For Saraya's number one... No, am I doing words here? Toni Storm wants to look forward, not in the past. She's looking forward to a four-way women's match next week to determine the number one contender for Saraya's AEW World Championship. God, Warren, that wasn't that hard. And she basically tells Renee, until then, chin up, tits out, and watch out for the shoe. Then, of course, she goes off frame and chucks a shoe at Renee. Yeah, look, I think the Juice Robinson influence is starting to peak here. And for the better, this is great stuff. Hangman Adam Page is in the ring with Tony Schiavone. He talks about winning the Battle Royal at All Out on the Zero Hour. Talks about why he picked the Chicago Public Education Fund to give his $50,000 to, because he used to be a teacher. And he also said, teachers, we love you. You're underappreciated, underpaid. Respect. See, all you... anyway. No. I'm not doing it. I'm not making any comparisons. I'm not pulling out weirdos on the internet bemoaning, that it was CM Punk's left-leaning liberal ideas that got him fired. Look, I'm just going to leave it at that. Shane Swerve Strickland comes out, accompanied by Dancin' Prince Nana. Strickland says being in a coffin for 2 weeks really gives you clarity. I'm like, come on, brother. And the first person he thought of when he got out of the coffin was Hangman Page. He's like, okay, so now you're wrestling for charity. Are you AEW's mascot? Are you happy being on the pre-show, Hangman? Because he knows Hangman Page isn't ashamed of himself. But here's the line, so I'll be ashamed for you. Tremendous stuff by Swerve here. He talks about how Hangman was the hand-picked franchise player, tag team world title champion, box office records, a world champion in his own right, leaning up to All In, an attendance record that was created, an all-time attendance record that was created off of his back. Swerve says that if he had got all the opportunities he had, he'd be the first black AEW heavyweight champion. But he's taking a backseat, he being Paige. He feels he's taking a backseat to the elite because he's gotten comfortable. So he's offering him two options. Option A, ride off into the sunset like all the little cowboys you used to watch when you were a little baby, and let his contract fizzle out, move out of the way and let Swerve take his spot. And he'll turn this into his house. Or option B, cowboy up, find that fire in you, and show everyone what cowboy shit is all about. Tremendous stuff by Swerve here. Like, absolutely tremendous stuff. What a fantastic pairing this is. Or they could fight for the spot. But Swerve says, I have zero empathy for human life. Wow. And he'll walk him like a dog. Look, Paige leaves. Strickland then, as he's walking up the ramp, just lays in one more blow, talking about his wife and kids. So Hangman is back in, gets into Swerve's face, which allows Brian Cage to attack him from behind, lay him out. So we on the Mr. Warren Hayes show here have been tremendous proponents of Swerve Strickland and him being up higher on the card. I have said it multiple times, and I will stay focused on this. He is world championship material. I sincerely believe that. And there is no one, there's not another heel in this company that resembles what Swerve is able to do, like in his persona and in his promos, how he delivers his vileness and how he is in the ring, and he is such a complete package when it comes to a top tier heel. And to juxtapose him to ace of the company, white meat, Adam Page is perfect, actually. And if you wanted a guy that'll take him out of his comfort zone, and I'm all for this. And I am all for the Hangman getting some more airtime. Now we're gonna put to rest the Where's Hangman stuff for now, until it happens again. But look, we've got himself a new arc here. The millennial, and the thing is that it all works in his anxious millennial cowboy thing, where it's like, You know, now he's doubting himself. You know, he didn't get mad. He only got mad at Swerve when Swerve brought up his family, which is a trope and is fine and, you know. But other than that, he wasn't getting mad. You could tell there was, it was just hitting home, and it was like, you know, he was doubting himself. This is what we have now. We have doubting Hangman Page again, and that's fine. I think it's good to circle back to this arc. It's not circling back to this arc. It's, you know, we're reestablishing Hangman Page because he's been off TV for so long, you know, being the other guy in the Elite now. Where is all the success? Where is top babyface Hangman Adam Page? I like this segment a lot. I thought this was very good. Commentary hypes up the tournament matches. Rampage and Collision this week. Get promos from Jay Lethal, Penta, Jeff Hardy, etc., etc. And then the main event, the AEW, the other quarterfinal for the AEW World Title Grand Slam and Eliminator Tournament. Darby Allin defeated Nick Wayne. Darby, from the get-go, completely wipes out on a dive as Nick Wayne moves out of the way. But he fell so hard. He fell as safely as he could. But he really wiped out on this one. Superplex and Fisherman's Buster by Wayne. Figure four by Darby Allin. Darby Allin challenges Nick Wayne to hit him as hard as he can. So what does Nick Wayne do? He super kicks him right in the mush. Christian Cage pops out. He goes on commentary. He wants to check all of this out, of course. Flanked by Luchasaurus. Wayne runs Darby Allin off the apron. Darby Allin goes up top for the coffin drop, but he can't bring himself to do it. Oh, is it that violent? Are we having, I'm so violent. Why am I so violent towards my friend? And is the coffin drop really that violent? Because listen, this is what he does after. He being Darby Allin, he clasps the wrists and starts bending the arms of Nick Wayne back and then proceeds to stomp his head. I don't see how this was any smoother or cleaner or not as savage as a fucking, you know, splash from the top rope, a back first trust fall. You know, I don't know how that's worse. That came across as worse. Darby Allin wins, and if I'm Nick Wayne, and this is what I wanted to circle back to, like if we're teasing, because of course Christian Cage then stands up and he applauds, and Nick Wayne sees him there, and Darby sees him there, and there's this, and everyone stares, and you know, we're done. You know, we hit the bricks. But like, if I'm standing there, excuse me, if I'm Nick Wayne and this Darby guy is supposed to be my friend, my mentor, I'm supposed to be his protege, and he's kicking the back of my head in, like viciously brutal. I'm like, no, maybe this Christian guy has, you know, he's got a little something here. Maybe he's right here. Maybe he's got a point. This Darby guy, you know, sends me up the river by forgiving AR Fox without questioning what I think about it. And now he's kicking the back of my head in while I can't defend myself. Jesus Christ, man. Like I get, and you know what? There is nothing better in pro wrestling than a heel who has a point. So if Nick Wayne does decide to go with Christian Cage, you're like, it sucks, but Nick did the best possible thing because Darby was being a dick. Like observably, you know, Darby is not, he's not a shining star here. He's sort of like bouncing around doing whatever the hell he wants. Meanwhile, Nick Wayne, you know, still has to deal that Darby is now friends again with the guy who assaulted him in his home and has to deal with the fact that Darby kicked his head in when he couldn't possibly even defend himself. So I'm seeing it. I'm seeing the writing on the wall, folks. Nick Wayne joining up with his new dad. I can see it. Good little episode of Dynamite. I think everything feels fine, feels fresh. I'm very curious to see what's going to happen this week with Collision, but you know, will it still feel like Collision, or is it going to start feeling more like Dynamite? I hope it continues to feel different than Dynamite, because I think that was one of the show's strengths. But this right here felt good. Lots of stuff happening. Good little matches. Setting up angles. Setting up stories. I don't think this is the greatest Dynamite of all time. I thought this was a very good Dynamite. Easy to watch. Easy to pick up. You get everything being set into place. You saw your favorites. No Elite this week, but you know, next week we'll see what happens. I have no real qualms with this show. No true quibbles. Just a good show. Stuff happening. Good little TV matches. It was an easy 2 hours watch. Nothing, at least to my taste, nothing terrible, nothing outrageously bad. Good effort put on together by everyone involved. Just like this effort was pretty good put on by me only, because I'm the only one involved in what I do. It's not meant to sound sad. It's just, you know, how we do things around here. And it's great. But it's also great that you all stuck around to the very end here to listen to me say this kind of bullshit. Thank you so much for listening this week. Leave a like on YouTube. A subscription as well would be fantastic. And some reviews and ratings on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Those things are tremendous. I will be back on Sunday for the Collision review. Otherwise, back on the Mr. Warren Hayes Show beat on Tuesday. So in the meantime, I hope you all have a great rest of your week. Wait a second. More like, hang on. Why is this? It shouldn't be like that. Why is this like this? I am whiffing so hard on the outros. Have a great rest of your week, everyone. We'll see you next time.